Hello, and welcome to Abram Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson from Abram's Global Strategy Team, and I'm joined today by my regular co-host, Kevin Edwards, our Strategy Director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, not too bad.
Busy?
Yeah, fairly busy. I'm trying to cram everything in before we finish for Easter.
Before the Easter weekend, yes.
For the long, warm Easter weekend, scheduled to be warm.
20 degrees, I've heard.
Yeah.
From my sources on the TV.
At the Met.
Yeah. Now, having recently launched the latest version of the Abram Report, which Kev, you'll have read from cover to cover now, I assume.
Obviously.
Who was your favourite partner in the Power 100 list of innovative and valuable partners on the Abram platform?
I think all of them.
All of them.
It's very difficult. You know, we deliberately didn't make it a sort of a rundown from 100 to 1. Because we wanted to treat them all equally. And so I think it would be unfair of me to highlight anyone in particular when they're all of such high quality.
I've never known you to be so diplomatic.
Which was your favourite?
I agree. But I am known for my diplomacy, I think.
Exactly.
So that's aligned with my character.
Diplomatic Davinson, that's what they call you.
Yes, they do, among other things.
Yeah.
So
beginning with D.
Today I wanted to explore one of the kind of five core themes of the report, which is enabling ethical e-commerce. So our main interview today is one of the partners who feature in that section of the report, Generate. I spoke to Sam Jones, who's the founder of Generate, about the origins of the privacy-conscious browser that gives users control over their personal data and really rewards them if they choose to share it. But before we get into that, I think it is worth, for the audience's sake at least, and particularly those that maybe haven't read the report just yet, defining what we mean by ethical e-commerce, because Generate are actually a really good example of why it's not simply defined by a selection of partners that are maybe more eco-conscious or focused in on maybe more conventional sustainable values and are promoting those types of advertiser to their audience. So for the report, we wanted to broaden out the scope of what that ethical aspect might mean to include things like incentivizing physical activity, which we have with the WeWard app, encouraging electric vehicle adoption via the kind of rewards platform AndCharge, who we had on the podcast quite recently as well, or even rewarding society's key workers as the likes of ID.me and Blue Light Card do. So all of the selected partners are using the mechanics of the affiliate model to somehow contribute to some socially positive effect. And there are some really innovative approaches in that chapter, which are well worth checking out if you haven't come across them before. But the sustainable aspect is inevitably one that many of the selected partners do focus on. And this specific angle is one that I got to talk about very recently at the Affiliate Huddle conference last week, which was hosted down in Brighton in the UK. I went along with more than 500 other industry peers, and the event really offered a chance for a host of new speakers to take part in a series of panels on stage that covered everything from content commerce tactics to incorporating influencers into affiliate programs, as well as a series of innovation pitches from various new startups in the industry as well. It was great to see so many familiar faces, a lot of new faces as well. It was really busy, actually, Kev. It was more busier than I anticipated, because I think the last one we'd done with Huddle was like September last year, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think there was still a lot of caution at the time around people coming out to a big communal event face-to-face in person for the maybe one of the first times post-lockdown. So it was good to see there was obviously a lot more confidence about people coming back out and meeting up in person for physical events again.
Yeah, I couldn't make it, unfortunately. Had a planning day. I've certainly, from looking at some of the posts on LinkedIn, et cetera, it did feel as though it was really, really buzzy, which obviously is really positive.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of presence from all the kind of big networks and big platforms, and a lot of the advertisers and publishers and agencies and various other people across the industry. But I was actually hosting a session down there, which was called How Are Affiliates Enabling Ethical E-commerce? And I was joined on stage by Jake Hodgkiss from Top Cashback, who feature in this Power 100 chapter as well, thanks to their green cashback product that they've recently launched. And also Marlene Vera Roda, who is the e-commerce manager at the nutrition brand Form, who are also actually a registered B Corp and have made sustainability a real key part of their business and their brand identity. So it was really fascinating to hear firsthand from two companies that are actively pursuing this approach and to discuss how affiliate marketing can play a role in helping consumers shop in a more sustainable way. And actually, one of the things that I kind of introduced at the start of that session, just to kind of explain the context, I guess, around why we chose to kind of hone in on this particular theme, is the growing demand that's coming from a whole different load of different perspectives at the moment around these ideas of sustainability. And there was I was looking at Google search trends within the actual shopping category, so not just generic search, but looking specifically at Google shopping search trends. And if you put in the word sustainable and look at the evolution of its popularity over the course of the last 15 years or so, it's massively peaked in the last four or five, with it reaching its kind of apex, relatively speaking, last kind of late October, early November, which is obviously when the COP26 climate change conference was being held up in Glasgow. But it's kind of sustained this interest now, and there's clearly a desire from consumers to understand which brands out there are sustainable. From an advertiser perspective, I was reading just last month, I think, about the heightened demand for ad placements on climate coverage across a whole host of different high-profile media publications like Bloomberg, like the Financial Times, the Times themselves, etc., were all reporting that actually RFPs they were getting from advertisers were increasingly focusing in on their climate coverage, and they're kind of willing to pay extra to kind of appear alongside that content. And then even from like an investor perspective, when you look at ESG-based funds, for instance, those that have some measure against environmental, social, and governance criteria, there's a huge amount of money that's now going into these funds, either from private investors or pension funds and other hedge funds, etc., as they have this desire to try to back more ethical businesses, which I think all of these different perspectives clearly show there's a kind of converging of interest and demand around this particular space right now. What I was going to say, though, was the fact that from an affiliate perspective, when you kind of step back, I guess, from that macro outlook, it's really fascinating to see how consumers are turning to affiliates and to publishers to maybe a lot of the standards around, particularly in ESG, a lot of the criteria around what environmental actually constitutes or what sustainability actually constitutes are very subjective. And so when you've got this kind of fragmented market where there's lots of information, maybe conflicting information, maybe what constitutes sustainable to me is very different to what constitutes sustainable to you, Kev. We can have that debate after this podcast, maybe. But I know that when you have a kind of problem like that in the market, a lot of the time, actually, people defer to authorities in that particular space and those that have maybe expertise in this particular area. And that is really where I think affiliates can start to play quite a pivotal role in helping to guide shoppers, help them navigate this quite fragmented understanding of what constitutes a good suggestion or an alternative brand that you could buy from. And so that's really, I think, where the kind of interest from an affiliate perspective lies at the moment.
I suppose I hate to use the word because it feels like massively overused in recent times, maybe based around this topic amongst others, but it really feels as though that sort of authentic, you know, using the word authentic, really comes into play here, in that people want to be also associated with something that is authentic. And if you, it feels as though something like sustainability is something that you really have to kind of bake into your business model across everything that you do, or it has to be something that you really live and breathe. It can't just be something you plug in. And so authenticity kind of probably naturally comes with that territory. I guess without kind of naming names, I have heard from a couple of different businesses that operate in the affiliate space about how they want to introduce maybe like a greener or more sustainable aspect to their business model. But it feels maybe slightly superficial in the way that they're talking about doing it. And so whilst it kind of might feel like a bit of a potentially that feels maybe a bit of a box ticking exercise, I don't know. I think that quality tends to kind of rise to the surface, so it's going to be an interesting one to see how this builds out. But it's quite clear that advertisers are also building business models where they will be probably looking for affiliates, as you say, to support that. I mean, like the M&S recent example where they're now renting clothes, and this whole sort of concept of the circular economy, where you're kind of effectively creating a sustainable economy that is as kind of carbon neutrality and all of those kind of things, recycling embedded within the business model. They will be looking for authentic affiliates that can kind of support those types of new business models.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that really aligns with the EU recently published a new strategy for sustainable textiles. And so they're trying to, I guess, take aim at the fast fashion business culture. They have this strategy around trying to improve the kind of life cycle of products across things like clothes and furniture and smartphones that are sold in Europe, and that these need to be longer lasting and they need to be easier to repair under these new rules that are being proposed by the EU. And obviously that is taking aim at a lot of those companies that they kind of have identified as misleading consumers with maybe false environmental claims, or, you know, we know that accusations of greenwashing are pretty prevalent or quite pervasive across the industry right now. And yeah, I think that for businesses that are maybe tacking this on as a kind of like, you know, this is a thing that we might try to do to kind of appease an audience in the short term, it just, that, like you say, is not going to really do it, I don't think. And I think that some of the kind of partners that we work with, their expertise in being able to kind of see through maybe some of those more superficial attempts or claims of sustainability is really where the value for an audience and a consumer comes in. So
I guess that one of the interesting aspects, and kind of, I don't really know how I kind of feel about this, but if you're a business, like if you're a retailer that doesn't necessarily have this at the heart of your business, or it isn't necessarily front of mind at the moment, in terms you kind of maybe know that you need to make changes, but you don't necessarily know what they are yet, or which probably is the case with maybe lots of smaller businesses. Perhaps they see the exposure to affiliate models as being a way of kind of almost appeasing that to a degree, or at least giving them kind of an insight into how they can partner with more ethical or sustainable, however you want to label them, partners.
Yeah, definitely. And it was really interesting to talk to Jake and Marlene on the panel session at Huddle about precisely this kind of topic. And, you know, from Marlene's perspective, you know, they've made this core to their identity and they've built it from the ground up around some of these values. And how you then choose who you partner with and who you decide to kind of promote your brand to is a kind of vital part of that strategy more generally. So,
I suppose one of the inherent challenges that we always have, which is about these types of relationship, feel sort of quite incremental and quite iterative. And we know that very often, because the affiliate model can be quite manual, that people are kind of looking for quick fixes or easy sales or way of kind of being able to ramp up their sales really quickly. And so maybe it feels that this is sort of like the flip side to that, in that actually, it does require investment and slow building of those partners and introduction of those partners that aren't necessarily going to be driving the volume, but they're potentially measured by additional metrics alongside just sort of revenue and sales.
Yeah. I think this is, you know, looking at it from a purely marketing perspective, you know, there is branding value in working with these partners. And if these partners do decide that actually your business as a retailer aligns with their principles and their values, and they feel comfortable promoting you to their audience, there's a huge sense of status, I think, that goes with that. What Top Cashback have done with their Green Cashback initiative is to work with Ethical Consumer Guide, which I think has been running since like the 1980s as a magazine that provides information around brands that you should or shouldn't maybe perhaps be kind of buying from across those criteria. And they have made use their standards essentially to kind of provide that curated selection of brands that are offering cashback through their platform. And so it's not something that's simply, you know, it's not top cashback's values necessarily who an audience wouldn't go to look for that kind of sustainable criteria necessarily. They're actually adopting and using a platform that has already established that criteria, has that reputation, has that status. And so they're able to leverage that and have some authority in this space still. Now, I'm hoping to get both Jake and Marlene on a future episode of the podcast to discuss this topic further. So keep your ears peeled for that soon. But now let's jump into my conversation with Sam at Generate, discussing a different aspect of this ethical e-commerce theme. So, hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us on the Awin Talks podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, where do we find you today? Where are you based?
So, at the moment, I'm working from home. We usually work from offices. A guy called Tuukka Soliman, one of the dragons on Dragon's Den, he gave us his office space. That's where we're based. But actually, he's moving office at the minute. So, we've got a two-week gap where we're all working from home, and then we'll be back with him again mid-March.
Brilliant. Well, I might as well ask you now then, actually. You mentioned Dragon's Den and your successful appearance on the BBC Entrepreneur Show, for any of the audience members who aren't familiar with the programme here in the UK, really helped bring awareness of Generate to a much wider audience. I just wondered, what were your expectations for that original pitch to the Dragons? And were you surprised by their enthusiasm for the solution?
Yeah, so, I mean, a great question. So I think we all know from watching the TV show, watching the program Dragon's Den, that as an entrepreneur, you never know what's going to happen when you walk out of those lift doors. You don't know whether the dragons are going to get what you're talking about. They might savage you on your numbers and really go for you. So it is, of course, in terms of knowing what to expect, you've got no idea. So I was so pleased and relieved when the dragons instantly got what I was telling them about Generate. They understood why we're building what we're building, what we're doing, what our mission is, and why people love it and use it every day. And as a result, it went phenomenally well. Yeah, we had offers from four of the five dragons. It went viral with over 20 million views of the pitch in 7 days afterwards. Lots of newspapers called it the best pitch ever on Dragon's Den. And of course, we brought on board Peter Jones and Tuukka Soliman. Tuukka offered us his office space. And then actually after airing, Tej Lalwani, one of the dragons I didn't choose, he then called me up and said, "Sam, I can't miss this deal. Let me invest. I'll come on board." So we've now got three dragons now, which is great.
Fantastic. So just to kind of give our audience a bit of background on Generate itself, could you explain a bit about what it is and how the idea first came about?
Sure. So I'll start with where the idea came from. So I used to work at Red Bull, the energy drink, where I was a global brand manager. So I was personally responsible for about one third of their worldwide advertising. And that meant that I had a large budget and I was spending that across the world in about 96 countries. And that covered everything from TV ads to billboard ads to digital ads and so on. And what I realized in this role was the fact that Facebook and Google and big tech companies were, of course, tracking everything that people do online, but that from a consumer's perspective, there's very little awareness about this. You don't realize or recognize what's happening. So what I believed very simply was that at a point in the near future, people would become aware of this, and as a result, they would want one of two things. And that's either A, the ability to stop this from happening so they can have more control over their data, or B, the ability to share in the rewards that are created from it and to get something back in return. So I left Red Bull and I founded Generate with a very simple mission: to build technology that would empower people to be able to control and earn from their own data. So fast forwarding to where we are today, we've got our browser, which is totally free and anyone can use it, the Generate browser. And we give people a super simple choice between privacy mode or rewards mode. And if someone chooses privacy mode, we stop all companies from tracking them online. Or if they choose rewards mode, they opt in to share their data with Generate. We aim to put that to work on their behalf. And in return, people earn points and they can redeem these points for products, vouchers, or donations to charity in our marketplace. So right now, 91% of our users choose rewards mode. We've got over 460,000 people that are registered and using Generate. We're growing really, really fast. And in an average month, our users spend the equivalent of 242 years in time spent on Generate. So yeah, it's super interesting, super exciting. And we work really closely with Awin when it comes to what we call our marketplace. And this is where users can redeem their points for products, vouchers, or donations to charity. And we work, super closely with you guys to create partnerships with merchants and with retailers so that we can fill our marketplace with relevant offers for our users so that they can make the most of it. And that would be a super quick, high-level explanation, but there's actually loads more and lots more exciting things we're doing with merchants too.
I'm sure. No, I just wanted to refer back to going back into the dragon's den, as it were. You mentioned about the fact that the dragons, you were surprised slightly by how they got the solution so quickly and it really resonated with them as individuals. What do you think's changed over the last, say, kind of 5 to 10 years in terms of that general awareness around personal data, around privacy, tracking, all of these elements that make up obviously a large portion of the digital advertising industry?
It's a brilliant question. So I think there's a landscape shift that is happening at the moment. And we can look at that from all fronts, whether that's from a legislation perspective, when we think of GDPR or CCPA in the US or CPPA in Canada or any other form of legislation. And also more changes which are coming. So I'm actually working and advising the UK government at the moment about the future of data and privacy. And what I can tell you is that right now, it's still the Wild West, really, if you look at it from a consumer's perspective. I mean, the fact that if you use the world's largest search engine and you want to stop them from tracking you, it takes you 17 clicks to do so, but what, just one click to allow it. Or if we think about cookies, and of course, we all know that cookies are going to become extinct by the end of this year, but just to use it as a very easy example, the fact that right now, if you go to the UK's most popular news website, and the fact that it's one click to allow them to drop a cookie on you, which by virtue of doing so is sharing your information with 1,436 different companies. But if you want to say no on that cookie banner, it's like something off the Crystal Maze. You get sent on such a trip, you can't even find the no button. And that's insane. So what I can tell you is there will be continued change, and the direction of travel is around a principle of symmetry, which means it makes it very easy for people to opt in, or just as easy for them to opt out. So what that means is it's going to be companies who are embracing this philosophy of allowing consumer choice and giving consumers a reason to share their data are going to be the ones that end up retaining information and being at an advantage.
Yeah, I think there's like at the moment, the way that the landscape and the kind of mechanics behind it work in terms of that user consent, it leads to an awful lot of apathy. And we've seen people just clicking yes. You know, I do it myself, even though I've got some awareness of what goes on in the background there, for the sake of just being able to access the web in the way in which is kind of most effective for my needs in that immediate moment. And it's only I talking to my mum, for instance, who doesn't really understand anything around this space, but she will kind of actually go to the lengths of deselecting all of the various ad tech vendors in the background and the third party tracking kind of companies because of this familiarity that she has now as far as this is concerned as a topic. And I think that that's a really interesting evolution in terms of people's general awareness around what this actually means now, what it constitutes, and the desire to have that choice that is really, I guess, at the crux of what Generate is all about.
Totally agree with you. Yeah.
I mean, I was going to ask you, in terms of actually monetizing the partly monetizing Generate through the affiliate channel, was the fact that this reward mechanism involves a degree of consumer choice inherently, was that what drew you to monetizing Generate partly through the affiliate channel?
Yeah. So, what we learned actually that's really interesting is when I started Generate, I thought that we would, if we made £1 from your data, we'd give you 80 pence back. But what we actually learned is that what's most interesting to people isn't monetary value, but it's what we call perceived value. So for example, if I stop a 25-year-old on the street and I tell him that he can have £7.99 this month, then he really will not care. But if I tell him that he can have a month of Netflix for free, then all of a sudden, he's really excited by it. The monetary cost is the same, but the perceived value is very high. So it was with that insight that we built out what we call our Generate Marketplace. And this is where we put products, vouchers, and donations to charity to allow our users to spend their Generate points on these things. And one great example of a partner through Awin that we're working with at the minute would be someone like, we've got a long list, but off the top of my head, someone like Beer 52, so or Wine 52, their sister company. So right now, a user can get 3 or 6 bottles of wine through Generate. That would usually retail for $32.99 if they were to go direct. But through Generate, they get that totally free. They just spend their Generate points on it and they pay the price of postage. So we've seen, of course, a massive uplift where thousands and thousands and thousands of our users see the value in this and they're redeeming it every day and every week. And of course, for the partner, that's fantastic because they're reaching their target audience and accessing people that they want to access. And what we see as well is by virtue of our user base, they tend to be very loyal to these brands. So anything which has a model which is based on subscription, the lifetime value of our users tends to heavily outweigh the average lifetime value. And that's why a lot of these partners through Awin are really enjoying working with us.
Yeah. In terms of the demographics of people that are actually signing up to Generate and using the browser, where do the demographics skew?
So we've got a bit of a broad range at the moment, and we're growing very fast, so it's always changing. So at the minute we see on average is kind of 18 to 40-year-olds. We have a male skew. We would say that generally they're what we call kind of early adopters or more technologically savvy. Mm-hmm. However, we've also recently had a load of young mums come onto the platform, and that's through mum bloggers writing about us or vloggers telling stories about us. And every time that we're on BBC News or Sky News, we see a massive influx of another demographic. So we are broader than one might imagine. In terms of the products and partners that connect best, it tends to be FMCG category, technology category, or anything where there's that high perceived value. And we tend to see that those offers go down best and work best with our users.
Great. And are there any other ways in which brands can partner with you through the affiliate channel currently?
Yeah, absolutely. So another route, we've just launched what we call the Generate Genie. And this is a product where, so again, by virtue of owning the browser, so Generate's a full browser, what that means is that we have a phenomenal relationship with our user, and we have the ability to do more things for them. So Generate Genie is a product which adds discount codes to users' baskets. So what that means is when they're visiting a website, we check if there's any discount available. And when they hit that website, we notify them and tell them about it to make them aware of it. And consequently, we're trying to drive that purchase through. So at the moment, we're working with a lot of merchants in order to get those exclusive discount codes or a discount code with our tag on it. And again, we're driving a lot of sales through that at the moment too. So there's these kind of two avenues at the moment, which is through that marketplace or via the discount codes too, which we're automatically adding in the browser. And one more point on that as well is that we, of course, have a directory. So we try to drive traffic to these sites that we partner with, and we're constantly nudging people and making them aware of these deals and driving those purchases as well.
Yeah, of course. Now, obviously, you're in a kind of massive growth phase at the moment. What are the kind of plans for the future as far as Generate's concerned, and how are you going to continue to evolve the solution and to attract even wider audiences?
So it's a super exciting time for us at the moment. We're definitely in a really nice growth phase, as you said, where we've got this strong and continual uptick. In addition to that, we have some major partnerships that we're looking and feeling confident that we'll close this year that have the ability to put Generate onto millions or tens of millions of devices. So where we are today, which is small, fast growing and exciting, we see that trajectory continuing, but where we aim to be in 12 to 18 months is significantly larger. Like at the minute, we're a baby, soon we'll be a toddler. And of course, we're aiming to evolve very quickly. So yeah, our ambition is to continue user growth and to grow via partnerships strategically.
I mean, it's a hugely competitive field, obviously, with some enormous competitors in that space. And I think that was one of the questions that got pitched to you within Den. How do you see Generate sitting alongside the likes of Chrome, for instance, or Firefox, or Safari, etc.?
So I think what's really interesting is when we look at the world, if we just zoom out for a moment, and you realize as a consumer, when you're told and you realize that everything you do online is being tracked, that means every question you search for, every website you go to, every click, every like, every action you take, tens and often hundreds of different companies are collecting this data, aggregating it and often selling it. And when we come and tell people this and we say, hey, if you're okay with that, that's cool. Keep doing what you're doing. But you know what? We want to give you a choice. If you want to stop that, click here, choose privacy mode and we'll stop it from happening. Or if you want to get something back, click here, choose rewards mode and we'll enable you to get something back. We see that there's a very quick adoption and uptake because it's common sense, really. So of course, there's some giants in the space. What we're seeing right now is enormous organic growth. We have these major partnerships, which should really 10x everything very quickly. And then in addition to that, what I find really exciting is the realization that when we think about the internet, the entire internet, it's only really 30 years old. It was 30 years old last November since Tim Berners-Lee created it. Then if we think about Facebook, that's only, or Google, Google's about 24 years old. Facebook's about 20 years old. Instagram's about 12 years old. These Goliaths that we use every day are in their infancy. So of course, there is massive potential to create something new, to reimagine the world and to capture people's attention. And fundamentally, that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to achieve. And that's the path we're on.
Fascinating. Well, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast today. And it's a really, really interesting and innovative solution. So best of luck with all the future plans at Generate. And we really look forward to seeing the business grow over the coming years.
Thanks so much. It's been great chatting. I really appreciate your time.
Cheers. Huge thanks to Sam for taking part in the podcast there. And if you'd like to read more about Generate and their business, then you can read our profile of them in the new Aaron report, which we'll include a link to on the landing page for this episode. It's also worth checking out his original pitch in the Dragon's Den program, as he makes an extremely persuasive argument for the value of Generate to users. And we've linked to that specific clip within that profile in the report. Now on to other news, and wherever you are in the world listening to this, you'll no doubt be aware of the economic pressures that households across the globe are facing right now, as a number of factors have forced up inflation. So from supply chain issues, the lasting effects of the pandemic, energy prices spiraling out of control, and a host of other factors, all of these are combining to make the cost of living more and more expensive for everyone. In the US, government figures published yesterday suggested inflation had risen by around 8.5% in March, which has been the biggest rise seen since 1981, over 40 years ago. So Kev, you've been reading a report that looks at how this rising cost of living is affecting consumers in the UK, right?
Yeah, it is local to the UK, but obviously these are topics that, as you say, cut across multiple markets. It's an interesting report. It's a company called Hyperjar that commissioned the report, and they're effectively looking at how different UK households would be hit by the cost of living crisis. So they cut it by demographic and salary. And one of their starkest findings, I think, was that the least affluent households would see their discretionary income, i.e. non-essential spending, dropped by about 20%, which equates to about £850. And for average income, they've said that that will actually drop by about 7%, so about a third of that amount. But overall, it's still £430, which when you kind of obviously multiply that up by the number of households in the UK, they're saying that that kind of non-essential spend in the UK will drop this year by about £12 billion. So that's clearly going to impact a large number of industries as well as retailers. That will potentially have some, potentially will play out in different ways for affiliate marketing, but we're not kind of probably that sure at the moment about where it's going to land. So I guess one of the scenarios is that the squeeze will just be felt across the board, you know, on the high street as well as online. And obviously online has sort of
plateaued off or even sort of fallen back slightly off the back of the kind of the huge surge that we saw during lockdowns, successive lockdowns. But it could be that it skews more towards the high street suffering, in that people kind of snap back to those people that have kind of drifted back to the high street and to stores, maybe snap back to their kind of online ways, just simply because they recognize that there's more choice at their fingertips. So potentially that there are kind of more bigger savings to be made. It's probably likely that it's going to be felt differently between sectors. Typically, we know that when money's tight for people, they tend to cut back on kind of those bigger ticket items, obviously holidays as well. But we also know, which I think was something that was identified in the 2008 crash, which was the kind of so-called lipstick effect, whereby people like to treat themselves to smaller ticket items, but there's a perception that they're kind of smaller ticket, but often they're luxury items or small luxury items. So that means companies focusing on these products may actually prove to be quite resilient. Also, I guess one of the other things that we will be looking at is how it cuts across different affiliate types as well, because the obvious affiliates that I would say that are going to potentially see an increase in interest are going to be price comparison sites, as people look for the best deal. Maybe loyalty platforms and cashbacks. It's that perception of getting an additional benefit for transacting online. And then the obvious one, which are kind of voucher and coupon platforms, who are offering kind of, very straightforward discounts, be it, a fixed amount or percentage off across the site. Also be interesting to see how retailers utilize those brands as well, as they're kind of chasing these consumers that are potentially becoming more deal hungry. The Hotjar report actually identifies bargain-loving shoppers as a key segment when they look at it across different demographics. And they concluded that actually millennials are the most likely to kind of hunt out a bargain or a discount.
That's me. I'm a millennial. Just. You're Generation X, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm the jaded generation.
Yeah. I was going to say that you mentioned about the previous recession, the global financial crash back in 2008. And I do remember reading research in the aftermath of that suggested that consumers were inevitably, it's a very logical reaction and response, but kind of there was more interest in discounts. This is where kind of like discounting became almost established as a kind of like mainstream activity to do online almost. And I think that we're likely to maybe see that happen again. But the proliferation or the integration of discounting into so many different publisher models now, it's not, I don't think, just focused into what you might classically call a discount site. You see it across the board, across content, across media houses, and with white label solutions. And I think that when we talk about publisher diversification, it's not just simply new partners coming into the channel necessarily, but actually what we would once have seen as a one-dimensional partner actually being able to do lots of different things. And discounting is now going to kind of be part of that and integrated into all of these different publisher models.
Yeah, and you only have to look at the kind of the surge in acquisitions that we've seen, or consolidation within the affiliate space. Future incorporating price comparison and also voucher codes within kind of like a one-stop shop of your kind of research hub of products or services. So and it's also something that we've kind of always identified. I think we've talked about it here previously. One of the problems of affiliate classification is that it's quite a blunt instrument, and it doesn't really take effect of the fact that you can generate sales through discounting, but aren't necessarily a publisher that would be identified as a discounter. So, I think that's kind of a challenge that we have as an industry that we still haven't really solved.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of those acquisitions that you were talking about just now, and BNPLs, which feature in that report, I believe, as well as being something that maybe kind of generally younger consumers are resorting to, the easier credit that's available via a buy now, pay later scheme. One of the biggest of those platforms or providers, Klarna, has actually completed its acquisition of the Nordics-based price comparison site Price Runner at the start of April for around, I think it's about $125 million. Price Runner have been around for quite a while, and they've obviously built up.
They've been around forever.
Yeah. Klarna's been on something of a spending spree of its own in the last year or so, and they've hoovered up a number of prominent partners from across the affiliate industry as they try to kind of stitch together a series of these solutions in the commerce sector. Some like Price Runner and actually the influencer platform April, or AWPRL, I'm not sure, if that's the, I'm saying it correctly. They actually feature in our Power 100 list as well. And there's a clear intention, I think, from the company to become this all-in-one platform for users that keeps them within the Klarna environment or ecosystem, however you want to describe it, akin to how some of the super apps that have been massively adopted in the likes of China and India operate. And this super app trend actually is one that we identified at the start of the year as being something to look out for in the affiliate industry in 2022 because of this growing desire from a number of these quite powerful fintechs to try and achieve that status and to have that stickiness around the consumer journey. But I think that's about all we have time for on this week's episode of Awin Talks. So we'll call it a day and I'll say goodbye to you, Kev.
Cheerio.
And it's goodbye from me.